Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Brian Lehrer's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, June 18th. I'm Sean Carlson, filling in for Brian Lehrer, who's off for a few days to deal with some dental work. Do not worry, he will be back. We have a decision on DACA, or the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program started by President Obama and rescinded by President Trump. Earlier this morning, the Supreme Court, which has an unmistakable partisan divide, ruled against Trump's challenges of ending the program, which allows non-citizens brought to the U.S. as children to apply for protection from deportation. The ruling impacts about 650,000 people living in the U.S. It allows them to stay protected for now. Chief Justice Roberts wrote the opinion and provided the swing vote, joining the court's liberal wing to find that the Trump administration violated the laws governing federal agencies. So joining us now to discuss the historic opinion is Beth Fertig. She's senior reporter here in our newsroom covering immigration and the courts for WNYC, Jamie Floyd. She's host of WNYC's All Things Considered. She's also the station's legal editor. Hey, Jamie and Beth, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Okay, Jamie, let's get to business here. Now that the Trump administration's call to end DACA was found to be unlawful, what can we expect will happen next?
Well, it's actually a big ruling today, not so much for constitutional reasons, but for its effect. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's penned by John Roberts. He's the chief, so that shows the procedural significance of the case. But it's also a split decision, as you mentioned, joined by Ginsburg, Breyer, and Kagan in full. Sotomayor joins, but she also dissents in part over the issue of whether the Trump administration was discriminatory in its intent. We can talk about that if we have time. Mm-hmm. And as you also point out, the conservative wing, the four justices, their dissent. And these were three DACA cases that came from New York, which Beth will talk about, D.C. and California, challenging the Trump's administration, their authority to rescind DACA. The facts were different from the three states, but the issue was the same. And just really quickly, a reminder of how we got here so we have a basis on which to talk about it. There were years of battling over immigration reform, and then in 2012, President Obama issued a memo. So it's all about a memo from the Obama administration saying that if we can't get Congress to give young people a path to citizenship, at least let's protect the dreamers. Or a more cynical legalistic view would say, I'm not going to make these people a priority for immigration enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the DACA memo was written. It's a five-page memo. I always urge people to read it because it really gives you a sense of what we are talking about when we talk about deferred action for childhood arrivals. It's the memo that lays out the plan of what to do with people who came to this country illegally as children. And at the time the memo was issued, 2012, we were talking roughly 700,000 children. We're talking more people now. But it was not amnesty, Sean. It was not immunity. It was not a path to citizenship. And the memo says, quote, temporary stopgap measure. So these kids start going to DHS. They get fingerprinted, social security numbers. They start living their lives, contributing to our communities and cultures and economy. Fast forward to 2016. Trump rescinds DACA and we land in the U.S. Supreme Court. And the issue before the court is, could Trump rescind DACA? And the chief says today that it was an arbitrary and capricious act. And it's very important to understand that the court said the Trump administration could terminate DACA because the law and the precedent says that they could, but they went about it in an arbitrary and capricious manner. So that's really important to understand. If they had more time, if the election wasn't in November, they could go back and redo this in a way that might satisfy the law and the court, but they don't have time. Sotomayor would have gone further to say that they were discriminatory in their intent, but the other justices didn't go that far. The bottom line is DACA stands. 5-4, multiple cases, very confusing, a lot to understand. But in the end, basically, DACA stands. We have an election in November, which now becomes even more significant, even more important than it was before.
So as we mentioned, and you said as well, in terms of this court being so partisan and yet siding in this way, I think you kind of laid it out there, right? Based on the language from the Supreme Court, which you've managed to read through and dissect very quickly, so very commendable. Do you think that the decision here was based on a procedural rather than a constitutional standpoint?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, what mm-hmm. they're looking at, it's something called the Administrative Procedures Act, which governs the ways in which the executive branch can make policy. And, you know, Justice Thomas, just to jump ahead a little bit to the dissent, because it helps us understand what the court was wrangling with, he says that what the majority has done is has said that a president comes in and is bound by the previous president's memoranda. Mm. And so it's really a question of the power of a president to make policy through executive action and memoranda. Mm. And the court was that, you know, we can say, well, the court really only issued a procedural ruling today, and that's partly true, but that's really all they were asked to assess.
Right.
This was not a case.
I just want to jump in.
Go right ahead.
Beth, please, yeah.
There were due process, equal protection claims that were raised by New mm-hmm. York State as one of the plaintiffs, and mm-hmm. it looked like the court didn't really take that seriously, except for Justice Sotomayor in her. She concurred with part and dissented in part, and it was in her dissent that she found that there was a case for that because she felt that there was animus toward the DACA recipients by statements that President Trump made about Mexicans on the campaign trail. She seemed to suggest that mm-hmm. there was a constitutional case to be made, right?
Yes. So I did want to say that especially in this moment of racial justice and accountability that we are all walking through, mm-hmm. Roberts and Sotomayor, who have long tangled over this point of view, this issue of race and social justice, they split once again on this issue of racial animus and intent. And Beth is exactly right. And Sotomayor stands alone on this in DACA. She would have found that that DACA was motivated by racial animus and an intent to discriminate. And so that's the place where she dissents from the majority opinion. And so Beth is exactly right. And she would have gone much further had she been able to garner a majority on the issue of due process and discriminatory intent. But here, the majority focused on the arbitrary and capricious manner, very much like the census decision that we saw earlier, that the Trump administration just didn't get its act together and do things by the letter of the law rather than a larger constitutional violation.
It's such a similar tone, Jamie. You're right. It was all about the procedure and not about the constitutional merits.
Yeah. Jamie brought this up about the importance of the presidency in the Supreme Court, right? And that's something that the Jamie, I know, talks about all the time, right? Is that that's such a pivotal mm-hmm. part of the presidency. Do you think Trump is going to get the Supreme Court to address this opinion again before the election in November?
No, there's no time to do that. He would need Congress to do something. And it seems from what I'm reading on Twitter that that's not going to happen. Any changes would have to be made after the election if he is reelected. That's his next bite at the apple to deal with DACA.
This is go ahead, Jamie.
And even Kavanaugh says in his dissent, he takes a big swipe at Congress for the uncertain, quote, the uncertainty over the status of the DACA recipients.
Let's hear from Tony in Bergen County, New Jersey. Hey, Tony, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I am a DACA recipient based out of Bergen County, New Jersey. And, you know, I just want to say that, you know, today's decision, you know, like, you know, even, you know, it's something to celebrate, but I know that it's still on the shaky ground, but I am incredibly happy, not only for myself, for having a longer, opportunity to extend my DACA and to be able to work and support my family, but also it restores the order back to the 2012 order, which would cover, all the younger people who have risen through, but you know, have not been able to apply for DACA, because of the illegal termination of the program in 2017. And I just really want to say that, you know, the extension, you know, like, we really need to be protecting all the immigrants. We've seen the positive effects of the DACA program that has had on the community.
Yeah. Thank you, Tony. And again, what he mentions here is that this still is kind of shaky ground, right? I mean, it this doesn't mean that everything is back to the way that, say, Obama intended it, right? This still very well could fall through, I guess is a way of putting it. Right, Jamie?
Well, as a theoretical matter, Tony is right. Everything is back to the way that Obama intended it. The order still stands. But for people who care about DACA, who care about Dreamers, protest, yes, but it is important to vote, because the next occupant of the White House will have the power to rescind DACA and to comport the next memoranda with today's opinion, and to be sure that it is not arbitrary and capricious. So, and coming back to Beth's point, to be sure that the language does not reveal any discriminatory intent. So the real, it is shaky ground, depending on what happens in November. It's not just about the U.S. Supreme Court, but it's also about who occupies the White House. And the whole reason that President Obama issued DACA was because we'd had 10 years, even prior to the Obama administration, going back into the Bush years, of wrangling about immigration reform. And we've not been able to do that at all, certainly not successfully. And so this was a way to protect young people. And Tony is correct. Now, Beth, I think, wants to weigh in here. I'm sure they can go and participate in DACA. Whether there is a willingness or a trust to do that is a practical on the ground question.
Beth?
Yeah, I also, Jamie, it's not clear to me that they have to be in accepting new applicants for DACA. And I'm waiting to hear from United States Citizenship and Immigration Services on that, because over the past few years, we've been frozen so that only the current DACA recipients could renew. It expires every 2 years, their work authorization, their ability to stay here without being deported, but no new people were allowed. And there's, you know, over a million other people at least who are potentially eligible to apply for DACA who were not allowed to. So Is that clear to you, Jamie? Because it's not to me.
I understood that under the litigation, no new applications were accepted. You know, people aging into the program, but renewals were processed. I believe that with this ruling, DACA should move forward.
That they can let people apply.
Yeah, yeah. But certainly you're the on-the-ground reporter, and I'm sort of the aerial legal analyst.
Back to you, Beth.
I do think it's going to be a wait and see, and certainly the Trump administration has demonstrated every intent to block immigration policies put in place by Obama. So this ruling may have come down, and now they may find some other way to prevent the DACA recipients from participating in the program. And advocates may have to yet again go to the courts to make sure that DACA is properly implemented. But the ruling says that they cannot rescind DACA as a matter of policy and law.
Okay. We have just a few minutes left here. We want to get as many of your voices on the air as we can. Let's go to Natalie from Huntington, who's a DACA recipient. Hey, Natalie, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you so much. I've been listening to the decision, and I happen to be a recipient of the program, and I can't tell you how important it is, because it takes a weight off our shoulders for the people that, you know, benefit from this program. And I think it has done so many good things. It allowed me to go to college, get a job, and I know it has done the same thing for thousands of other people. So this decision definitely makes us feel a little bit safer once again.
Thank you so much for that call, Natalie. We have time for one more. Greg calling from Mexico. Hey, Greg, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, how are you doing? Just quickly, I wanted to say I live here in Mexico, in Cuernavaca, Mexico. I've been here for 22 years. And Mexico has been extremely welcoming to me as an immigrant. I'm from New York City originally. So I don't think people are aware of how much easier it is for people who want to immigrate to the United States. And the other thing I want to say briefly is that there are hundreds of thousands and possibly millions of people who have been deported and are living in Mexico because they were not able to get DACA. And these are people who, just like the Dreamers, grew up in the United States and consider themselves Americans. And I think this fight won't be over until we are able to get them to see their families in the United States.
Mm.
Yeah. Jamie?
Yeah, so meaningful. And what, you know, as Beth pointed out, Sotomayor really wanted them to address the equal protection and due process. And let's just get out of the legalese, the racial and ethnic nationalistic implications of the rescission of DACA. Mm-hmm. And it's just a mean-spirited thing. You know, you can talk about immigration policy and immigration reform, and we should, but the DACA program really targets young people brought here as children, who now, many of whom are adults, contributing in a fulsome, meaningful way. It just seems to make no sense whatsoever to pursue this all the way to the United States Supreme Court when there are many more important things we need to be doing as a culture and society. And you see the protests. The protests are fueled by the anger over this kind of mean-spiritedness. Beth, you've been reporting on the DACA recipients.
Yeah, and I just want to mention that there are a lot of them in New York City. Of course, we're a city of immigrants, and so that shouldn't be surprising. At one point, the mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs said there were over 30,000 DACA recipients in New York City, but over time their numbers have diminished as people didn't renew, or maybe they left the program because they got green cards or things like that. It could have been for positive reasons too, but now there's fewer than 20,000 in New York City. But these people were very, very nervous about what would happen. And a few weeks ago, I did a story about how they were applying months before they were due to expire. So somebody who was going to expire in April was applying this year, you know, in the spring, almost a year ahead of time, so that he could get another 2-year authorization, he told me, because he didn't want to take any chances, so that if the court struck it down, he would still get the 2 years of authorization to remain here. That's how nervous the DACA recipients were, because this is the only home they know. They have families, some of them have children, they have careers here, and they really want to do everything they can to remain.
Well, we will let Beth have the last word here. We have to leave it there for today. I'm Sean Carlson from WNYC News. I've been filling in for Brian Lehrer today. We've been speaking to Jamie Floyd, host of WNYC's All Things Considered, and the station's legal editor and WNYC senior reporter covering immigration and the courts, Beth Fertig, about the Supreme Court's big DACA decision, which came out earlier this morning. Thanks so much to both of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sean.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.